This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Morning, horse people. This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May 22nd, episode 919.
Good morning!
It's Thursday.
Let's kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
That's right, everybody. Today is your weekly two-minute warning to get busy surfing the web for off-kilter classifieds and emailing them to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com with bad ads in the subject line. On tomorrow's show, like we do every Friday, Glenn and Jamie will perform a dramatic reading of a select group of those ads, and the astute listener who submitted what we deem to be the best of the worst will win a fantastic prize. Prizes this week are provided by HorseGroomingSolutions.com. When you need gentle, effective, economical products for your daily or show grooming needs, look no further than the Horse Grooming Solutions brands that you have come to know and love. Healthy Hair Care, voted number one horse health brand by consumers, Silverado Show Grooming, and Old Timers Equine. You can find them all at your local tack and feed supplier, or you can go online to HorseGroomingSolutions.com. Also, by Dr. Rose's Remedies. Dr. Rose's Remedies Skin Treatment Salve and Spray are 100% all-natural products. They are anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal. Dr. Rose's are made with all human-grade ingredients and are safe and effective for the treatment of all manner of cuts and scrapes on your horse. And Dr. Rose's is the must-have product here at HRN headquarters to keep PT Scooter's delicate white pasterns free from dew poisoning. Ask for Dr. Roses at your local tack and feed supplier, or you can visit them online at drrosesremedies.com. Now sit back and enjoy this latest episode of Horsemanship Radio, featuring endurance rider Heather Reynolds and director of Monty Roberts Horse Sense and Soldiers, Pat Roberts. For your second course today, best-selling author John Katz joins Glenn and Wendy from the Driving Radio Show, so stay tuned for the fray, folks!
This is episode 16 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Index Fund Advisors, IFA.com. Horsemanship Radio is part of the family of the Horse Radio Network. Today, we have Heather Reynolds, champion endurance rider based in Florida, and Pat Roberts, executive director of Join Up International. That's the nonprofit organization that has been facilitating Monty Roberts' Horse Sense and Soldiers clinics for returned servicemen and women. This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to The Horsemanship Radio. Welcome back, everyone. Horsemanship Radio airs the 15th and the 30th of the month, and I have my producer, Glenn, here with me today. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Debbie.
How are you?
Good. You're too professional. You do everything so perfectly. And
do I?
But I have a complaint about that. I'd like you to mess up more, and I'll tell you why. We're starting to do a blooper reel now, and I have nothing from you. You really need to start messing up more.
I need a blooper reel. Yes. I got to practice it.
Yes, you gotta. You're too professional. We need to get some more mistakes and things.
This is why I pay him the big bucks, guys. Yeah. He lies. No, I do mess up. He's just a wonderful editor. People just don't know because there it is. Yeah. You do a great job of editing our shows, though. I think it was mastery, actually, that Liberty training with Christiana and Marco, because you were able to take some of the Italian that really wasn't necessary, but you kept all the beautiful Italian. Wasn't that great?
Yeah. When you have a translator, it gets old when you hear all three sides of the conversation.
Yeah.
So I tried to make it so you only heard two. And but being that I didn't know what they were saying, it kind of is more difficult.
You can do anything you want.
Exactly. No, I figured only the Italian people would know if I cut out the wrong words.
You know what? They could have been making it up, too. I don't know what they talk about. When
that's true. He could have understood perfect English.
Exactly. but with a great accent. Funny. But
hey,
people,
you know,
should
that episode did was our best listened to episode so far. So.
Yeah,
that was episode 15. If people missed it, go back to episode 15 of Horsemanship Radio. You can either get it at horsemanshipradio.com or you can go on the app. The Horse Radio Network app has it right on there and take a listen to it because it truly was our most listened to episode to date. So
absolutely. You're probably sick and tired of talking about it, but did you get to watch the Kentucky Derby?
Oh, I did. We've been covering it a lot. And a neighbor of yours won.
Yeah, California Chrome. Well, and not only that, but that trainer, Art, has been a trainer. I mean, mom and dad and Art go back forever.
Really?
He's 77, right?
Yeah.
And they were just so pleased for him because that is a dream of every trainer, and especially way out here in California where you do feel kind of arm's length to the whole industry of Kentucky and New York. You know, it was just an incredible experience to watch that. And would you believe that Dad's famous horse is named Nice Chrome. That's the one, his reining horse. It's big, you know, oversized quarter horse that he has.
I assume there's no relation being that we're quarter horse
and
thoroughbred.
You know? Yeah.
You didn't get any of the prize money.
No, just a lot of emails that said, hey, are they related? It was pretty cute. But no, and you know, it'd be like us to have him you know, full brother or something, but he's a gelding. Whoops. No, he's not a thoroughbred, but that was a wonderful story
to
watch.
You know, and I'm sure your dad and mom must be pretty excited too, because a lot of people forget that they, you know, are in the racing industry for a very long time in California. So for the pride of California comes through there too.
Exactly. And my whole growing up, that's how they made their living. But, you know, they didn't make their living on the track. They were off track trainers that started all the babies and really gave them a great foundation. And they were always topping the sales. All of mom and dad's horses topped the sales for nearly 20 years because they were such greatly trained, started, calm, sweet thoroughbreds when they went to the track, and remained that way because they had such a great foundation. So I'm really proud of the work that they did in the thoroughbred industry all those years, because it really started pointing out to people how it can be done quietly and without a lot of pain and, you know, some of the traditional stuff.
And they bought you new clothes every once in a while, thanks to those.
I was
horses.
Really glad for the food on the table, and that's right. Yeah, it's a great experience, you know, with Santa Anita and Hollywood Park are just a couple of hours south of us, and there is a great tradition actually in California in thoroughbred racing too. People just don't think of that nearly as much as you do Kentucky.
Now, are you going to tell us? Are you willing to tell the audience how hard you are working this week?
Uh oh. I get some time off sometimes.
Well, I appreciate you actually being here doing the show when you could be drinking margaritas.
Shortly. But yes, there are six of us women. I'm on remote location right now. There's six of us women at a beautiful place called Sea Pines Resort right now. And we trailered our horses up here. It's just outside of San Luis Obispo, Morro Bay, some people will know. And there is a state park. It's gorgeous, called Montaña del Oro. And you can go, I don't know how many feet up it is, but they call it Nosebleed Trail, if that tells you anything. It's way high and it's up over the ocean. There's sand dunes that are hundreds of feet tall that you can go up and down. And then there's the greatest stretch of wide, wide beach, depending on the tide, and that we can run along. And so we can go in the mountains, we can go under the trees, we can go out on the beach. And, you know, it starts off cool in the morning. And is anybody drooling yet?
Yeah, I think they're all drooling. What are you talking about? Everybody just turned off their radios because they're mad at you.
Oh, now they got to come do it. It's a bucket list now. So, no, it's really beautiful. We've been up here quite a bit because it's really only about 45 north of us, 45 minutes north. So
now usually every year, and this is how I want to know, I want to know if this is true. Usually every year you head out to the mountains of somewhere and mm-hmm. you go packing with a group of girlfriends for yep. a week. Now, is it because we're all getting a little bit older now? You've decided to do the resort and you're not packing anymore?
It is nice to have a shower. I always thought that. It's very nice. And a little restaurant nearby.
And you notice how I said we in that. I didn't throw you under the bus. I'm there with you.
No, we still love that too. But, you know, Sun Valley, Idaho, we're just taking a break this year. They had a lot of fires up there last year, and it's pretty ugly up there right now. Okay. So we are giving that one a break. But we're going to go to another place where we can bring our horses up in the Santa Barbara Mountains called Rancho Oso in August. So we're getting like a double fix of, you know, showers this year. We'll go back to our single again next year. But
so you didn't have to have any pack horses along this time?
No, we got to bring our own, which is really cool. Because when we go to Sun Valley, of course, they've got their big Percheron cross. And their own horses, and they're solid as a rock. But it's fun having your own horse though too here. So yeah, and they're willing partners. So you know, it's part of those program trainings. So see, I think I can maybe write this off somehow.
I'm sure the IRS loves when you write 100 margaritas off in a week.
Yeah, we'll do that.
I'm just kidding.
But it is a lot of fun. All right, but I am at work. See, here I am.
Yes, you are. I'm impressed. Well, Debbie, what is coming up on today's show?
Today we have a great show. We have Pat Roberts. I love her dearly. She's my mom. And it's Mother's Day this week, so I'm really on top of that.
That's perfect.
So, yeah, we have her. But, you know, she is here.
I'd like to say, Mom, that she planned that, but I don't think she did.
I didn't. True. Sorry. But I'm going to give her a card anyway for that one. But today she's going to talk to us about our Horse Sense and Soldiers program, which is really timely. And also, we have a Tevis Cup winner, Heather Reynolds. And you'll have to go on the show notes to see her lovely picture, because when I tell you what she's done in her bio, you're going to think she's about 50. But she's not. She's a youngster, and she's wonderful. She's athletic and beautiful, and I can't wait to talk to her.
Very good. And all of that is coming up right after this word from our sponsor, and that is IFA.com, Index Fund Advisors.
Hi, I'm Mark Hebner, president of Index Fund Advisors and proud owner of Monty Roberts Willing Partners graduate, He's a Sugar Bear. You know, investment portfolios are a lot like horses. You need to find one that best suits you, your temperament, and your stage of life. Some people might like an energetic horse and an aggressive investment portfolio, while others are more comfortable with a gentle ride and a more conservative investment portfolio. The trick is to find the one that's right for you. That's what Index Fund Advisors is all about, matching people with portfolios, risk-appropriate, low-cost, and globally diversified investment portfolios. You can find the right portfolio for you by taking the Risk Capacity Survey at IFA.com. That's IFA as an Index Fund Advisors. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-643-3133. That's 888-643-3133.
Pat Roberts is Executive Director of Join Up International, and they have been producing Monty's Horse Sense and Soldiers workshops since Discovery Channel first documented how Monty uses trust-based therapy to help get veterans past issues of PTSD, that's post-traumatic stress disorder, and this has been going on since 2010. Welcome back, Pat Roberts. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Deb. Glad to be back.
Good. I'm glad you're back on. Today we had a subject that's been really current in the news, and I thought it was time that we let people know about some of the programs that are being developed there at Join Up International. I know that you're executive director of Join Up International, and we wanted to talk today a little bit about Horse Sense and Soldiers.
Well, that's one of our favorite subjects around here. A lot of people may not have known, was first introduced to the public via Discovery Military. And they came in 2010 and did a documentary here with Monty and three veterans. Mm-hmm. And it was very successful, well-received, and in fact, I think the document won an award for that year. Mm-hmm. And so that really kind of kicked off a program that Join Up International, our 501c3 not-for-profit foundation, has backed, and we've had a lot of people that have been interested in helping out, like Wood Clayson's Foundation and many, many others.
Helping support that program. That's great. So everybody knows a lot about natural horsemanship, and of course they believe in Monty's concepts of choice, freedom of choice with the horse and training in his methods. But what's the transition? What's the big leap that you can take to horses and soldiers with those concepts?
We all know that a lot of our vets have returned after being off in other countries and have seen and been through a lot of things that would make anyone a victim. Mm-hmm. And they come back and they have a hard time dealing with the memories and the experiences that they've had. And they have really sort of lost their trust. They've been disillusioned by how they've been treated when they come back from being in other countries. And a lot of things that have happened to them, they feel, or the vet administration feels, can be fixed with drugs. And we all know that drugs are not the answer. And so what is the answer? Well, we feel like we've come up with a great way of helping these vets, and it is with using the horse, and we teach the communication between a horse and a person, and in order for the horse to join up with the vet, the vet must communicate that he trusts the horse and vice versa. And that, it's really all about communication through trust. And we have 3-day clinics here on Flagazette Farms, where the vets come in and they're introduced and actually do join up. And it's wonderful to watch because it's such an emotional thing when this great big 1,200-pound horse walks up and rubs them on their shoulder. Mm. It just melts these soldiers, and it really gives us breakthroughs. And that's what we're after. That's our goal.
It's a unique program in that you use Join Up. There's a lot of good, solid programs out there across the United States, but no others use Join Up. Can you explain to the listeners a little bit about what a Join Up is?
Join Up is when we put a horse in a round pen, and we put the vet in there with the horse, and we teach the vet how to communicate with the horse through gestures, because the horse's language is silent. It is a language of gestures. And with a little bit of help, and usually we'll have an instructor or someone go in and put the vet in the positions that are necessary to communicate with the horse. And through communication, they develop a trust and a bonding. And it's a very emotional thing, and to describe Join Up, I probably have to be on here for an hour.
Yeah.
But it basically, you send the horse away, and then you allow the horse to negotiate to come back. Mm-hmm. And it's something that happens in the wild, and a horse will, their flight is usually about a quarter of a mile, and then they feel like, well, I better start negotiating with my predator because this is not going to be good. I'm going to run out of air. And so out in the wild, it's an amazing thing to watch. And this is what Monty discovered when he was very young, probably around 7 years old. He watched and studied, and he could see that the matriarch mare really actually was running the herd. And when there would be a little colt that was being naughty, she'd chase him away. And of course, when they're out there by themselves, they are prey. And it's a very dangerous position. So he watched these young foals, young horses, negotiate to get back into the herd, and how their language, using their bodies and their heads and their necks and their lips, how they would communicate to the matriarch, I'm sorry, I really would like to be a good boy, and please let me back into the herd. It's basically that. And mm-hmm. that's what's different about this program, because there's a lot of programs that, you know, they vets go out and they pick up the feet and they clean them out and they brush and they're around the horses, but they don't actually really communicate with horses. Mm-hmm. And this is the difference. And it's very, very simple, yet it's very complex, but it's easily understood because it's discernible and you see it right there. It happens. Mm-hmm.
So I saw on the calendar you've got one coming May 23 through 25, which is coming right up. Right.
That's true. And then mm-hmm. we have another one in July, and I think it's the 25th, 26th, 27th in that area. That might be a 2-day one. It might just be on Saturday and Sunday, but we try to have 3-day clinics because the longer we can be with the vets, the more that we can impart what we have to give them from here mm-hmm. and the better job we do. And the proof is that we have vets that come back and they will absolutely mentor the newbies, so to speak.
That's right.
And because they've been through it and they have a lot to offer. And the more vets that we can reach and get into our program, the more people we can help.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And I know the wonderful foundation supporting that, but it could always use more. Like to have more of those programs, too. Do you want to talk about, Dad was never in the military, but a lot of people find him very approachable from the military because of his background. Do you want to touch on that just a bit?
Oh, I can. Monty was an abused child, and he was abused until he got to be big enough that it was no longer feasible for his father to try and intimidate him through force. Mm-hmm. And because of this, Monty would use horses as his escape. Mm-hmm. And that's he had the opportunity to go into the wild and observe the wild horses, and he loved what he saw. And when he went home, he would try what he'd seen out in the wild on the horses that were captured and brought in for the wild horse race that they had in Salinas. That's mm-hmm. where he was raised, on the competition grounds of Salinas. And every year they had a huge 4-day celebration, a rodeo, and they had wild horse races. And so they were captured and brought to Salinas. And then after the rodeo was over, in Salinas, incidentally, they say rodeo. Everywhere
That's
else
right.
in the world, they say rodeo.
Isn't that
but,
funny?
So I'm always torn. I never know what to say.
Yeah.
But I was raised in Salinas, so I really should always say
you
rodeo.
You should say rodeo. Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, so after the races were over, the 4-day show was over, it was to the advantage of the Rodeo Association to have the horses started, and then they would sell for more money. And so Monty and his brother Larry were given the task of going out to the green corrals and working with these horses to get them started. And of course, Monty, that is where he really went to a university and studied everything that he had observed in the wild, and he started to apply it in the green corrals. And it worked, and he was so happy and so proud of it. But the sad part about it is, when he shared it with his father said, you know, what am I raising? There's something off this planet, and beat him again. Mm-hmm. So he learned to keep quiet about it and didn't really share what he'd learned for many, many years. But now, his detractors are, some of them are dead, and some, it just doesn't matter to him anymore, because he knows that what he learned is helping so many people and so many horses.
So many, yeah.
I think in the first, when he first started Langatha Farms, we would use that on about maybe 150 to 200 head of horses. After it was, he came out officially and did show it to everyone in 1989, including Queen Elizabeth, in the next 5 years, 20,000 horses were started by Join Up, and now it could possibly be way over 200,000. So it's gaining in popularity. People understand, and they can see the the great way of treating our animals and getting more of a partnership with them rather than adversarial relationship. Yeah. So it's wonderful. And when these vets come here and they watch and they go and then they can do it and they see that the horse understands the language, it really does melt them. And it gives them a confidence because there's something that trusts, and in return they can trust back. And then of course we have wonderful psychologists, psychiatrists, doctors, people that want to come and help and observe. And if they need, the vet needs some special counseling, we have people that will do that. And the program is so wonderful, and we just hope to grow it and that we'll get more and more foundations that will get behind it, because it isn't an easy thing financially to do, because we have to get the horses and we have to take care of them and you know, we have to employ people to help with the clinics, although Monty is really the one that conducts it. He is the one that really understands, because he considers himself a victim of PTSD as well. But he really doesn't like to say PTSD, because it isn't defunctionality. It really is, it's an injury, a brain injury, mm-hmm. Not a physical one, but a mental one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he calls it PTSI, in fact, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, he does.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. I think anybody who's a lover of horses understands cellularly in their cells what you were just describing as that therapeutic quality about horses, even if they've never witnessed a join up or understand about a veterans program. I think everybody can make the leap as to, after they listen to that, after hearing all the facts that you just put out, they can make that leap to seeing why it works. And it is free to the veterans to come to.
Yes, that's, you know, and we try to, if we can, try to help them with their expenses to get here. But basically, we're hoping to get people locally so that we can keep expenses down. But we've had people from Washington, D.C. that have flown in. We have a wonderful young lady that is our poster child.
Alicia Watkins.
Alicia Watkins.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was flown in. Someone helped us with getting her here. And she has just absolutely turned the world upside down. She is such a positive example of what our Horses for Soldiers can do.
Well, thank you. Thanks for sharing all that. Yeah, people should Google Alicia Watkins and her story. She's going to Harvard now, completely changed life. She was homeless when she first attended some of our Horses and Soldiers. And they should go to your website, www.joinup.org, and see the good work that's being done there. Thank you again, Mom, for joining us and sharing a little bit about that important program.
Hi, I'm Monty Roberts. And I know that I'm transforming the lives of horses globally. You can learn to do it too on my Equus Online University. There's a new lesson on there each week, all the way from join up to advanced. Watch world's champions give their lessons. Join at MontyRoberts.com. Go to my Equus Online University. You can transform your horse too.
Heather Reynolds has been riding endurance competitions since 1988. During her career, she won multiple national championships as well as winning the Pan American 100-mile championship individual gold medal in 2001, the individual silver medal in 2003, and the North American team gold medal in 2005. Phew. She has also represented the USA at the WEG in 2002, 2010, and the World Endurance Games in 2013. Heather also won the Tevis Cup once and the Hagen Cup twice. Currently, Heather is trying to get a spot on the USA WEG squad to go to Normandy, France this August. Boy. And welcome, Heather Reynolds. Welcome, Heather Reynolds. We're proud to have you on our show.
Well, thank you.
Hey, you know, we were looking at your websites, and I know your background is amazing, that you've collectively
won over 26,000 competitions with your husband, Jeremy, and that you compete on your own horses abroad and here, and you have four Tevis Cup wins under your belt. That is just collectively amazing to see in such a young couple. I'm wondering, is it unusual to have a husband and wife couple competing at such a high level like that?
It is pretty unusual. I think the only other husband and wife couple that I know of is actually 15 minutes down the road from us that's competing at this level. So it is pretty unusual.
Yeah. And that, is that work to your advantage? I mean, it must be nice sitting around dinner knowing, you know, the same things that are going on. Or is that kind of, do you have to cut work off at the end of the day?
We're pretty good about cutting it off at the end of the day. So we work side by side all day long with the horses. And then at the end of the day, it's time to unwind and do something else.
Yeah, good for you. I suppose that keeps it really healthy. Well, anyway, that was just that was one of those curiosity moments, because I just don't get to talk to a husband and wife team that compete at such a high level. That's just so interesting. So your website says, endurance is a constantly advancing sport. We do our best to explore, utilize, and create the newest cutting edge technology. So I got to ask, what are the most important developments in your training to date?
I would say the amount of time that the horses are actually working. That's changed radically over the years as far as how fast we train and how far we train. We do more quality work versus quantity work now. Mm-hmm. Where in the past, maybe we went, you know, too long of a training ride, but not quite fast enough. Mm-hmm. Now we kind of have it dialed back to where it's a little bit shorter mileage in training, but a little bit faster with speed.
Okay, that makes good sense. So, does it ever branch off into funny things like swimming or anything like that?
Sometimes we swim. We don't do a lot of swimming. We also have a hill treadmill, so the horses can do some hill climbing because we're here in Florida where there aren't any hills.
Yeah.
The deep sand here in Florida does translate well to the hills. We just did an event this past weekend in North Carolina at the Biltmore Estate, which is pretty rolling, and the horses did spectacular there just from the sand training alone.
Is that right? Yeah, that does make sense. I would think, yeah, the swimming, that's that different kind of muscle thing, isn't it?
Yeah, the swimming is really good for rehabbing and for cardio work because there's no impact. So we'll use it for that.
Yeah, good. So is the conditioning the key here?
As far as success?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what you do. You guys seem to do nothing but that.
Yeah, training the horse correctly and laying up correctly so that when you're asking for the final outcome of the really fast championship ride, yes, absolutely, that is the key to success.
Yeah, so we saw a beautiful horse of yours started at Flag Is Up Farms, and I know that you teamed up with Monty in the round pen to start a beautiful horse. Seems to me that you know how to pick them too. I mean, conditioning is one thing and you guys are amazing at a high level. I mean, you just have science behind you and all that, but you also know how to pick them, don't you?
Yeah, I do take a lot of pride in picking out a nice horse. There's some definite attributes that you can see consistently throughout our herd. And yeah, having a well-conformed horse is also absolutely necessary if you're going to try to gallop for 100 miles.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any valuable lessons that you've learned competing at such a level? I mean, everybody, you're such a young age to have accomplished as much as you have. And most people have to go. I think the reason there's a lot of people that don't make it or make it at a later age is because they have to go through so many pitfalls. And I'm just thinking, you must not have gone through a lot of those pitfalls. Is that true?
Well, there's been a ton of pitfalls, but I've been fortunate enough that I think I have around 19,000 miles of competition, so that you're going to have a lot of pitfalls throughout that amount of time, and I've competed on over 60 horses. So again, the variety of horses gives you more experience, obviously. And then I had the benefit of being mentored by some of the top, absolute top endurance riders in the world when I was very young. So that really helped. And whenever I go to a competition, I feel like I haven't gotten the full benefit of the weekend unless I learn something new, for better or worse. So I'm always looking and always learning something new at every single competition I go to.
Yeah, good for you. Do you want to name some of those mentors? I'd be curious at who you got to spend time.
Yeah, Becky Hart. She mm-hmm. is the three-time world champion. So when I was a junior, I was riding with her. I was riding with Mary Ben Stover, who mentored a huge amount of young riders. She's actually a Hall of Fame rider, as well as Becky Hart being a Hall of Fame rider.
Mm-hmm.
Julie Sir, who is also a Hall of Fame rider, and Trilby Peterson, who is also a Hall of Fame rider. So all of those people were right in the town where I was living and learning and mm-hmm. training when I was a kid. So that was extremely beneficial.
Mm-hmm. So which came first? Were you inspired by what they did, or did you just start picking up the reins and becoming a horsewoman, and then they found you?
I actually lucked upon the whole thing. No one in my family rode horses,
wow.
and I was horse crazy as a kid. And my dad actually found an ad in the local Penny Saver newspaper saying, feed horses in exchange for riding.
Huh.
And that person who placed the ad was Mary Ben Stover, and she happened to be an endurance rider. So had she been in any other discipline, I'd be doing
right.
whatever that was right now. But she happened to be an endurance rider, and I couldn't feed the horses for her because I was in school, but she liked kids so well, she just said, come out and ride. And she taught me. And all those people I named as mentors were good friends of hers.
Yeah. Oh, isn't the sport of endurance lucky to have you, though? A really great little perfect storm. What encourages you about the industry right now in endurance? What keeps you going?
Well, it's a lot of fun because it's for every level of rider with whatever horse they happen to have. So the fun thing is that it inspires people to go out and do things with their horses, whether they have a quarter horse, a Shetland pony, a top world-class Arabian, no matter what horse they have, they are able to go participate or compete in these endurance events. So it's very open.
Mm.
There aren't a ton of politics, you know, that you have to deal with. It's just a fun sport.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that. Yeah, I agree with you. It's fun to watch. I don't know that much about your sport. Tell me about the feet. You know, I know that no foot, no horse, but are they going barefoot these days, or is it just too much it's too much to ask, isn't it, for a foot?
But it really depends on the terrain you're racing. I have never ridden a horse barefoot for an entire competition.
Yeah.
With that said, being here in Florida with the sand, we do train many of our horses barefoot. Not all of them, because some of them, their feet just can't take it.
Can't do
but
it.
But many of our horses are barefoot in training. And then when we go to races, we personally prefer the Easy Boot glue-ons.
Oh, yeah, good.
It's like a rubber boot that you can glue onto their hoof, and it covers the bottom of the hoof and gives them protection. And the biggest benefit we found from using those is that the day after the event, you don't have nearly the amount of swelling or fill in their legs because it took so much of the concussion away.
Oh.
So they're really nice to use.
Good to hear. Yeah, that's great. I just know that there's a lot of innovation happening in that part of the industry and farrier work. Yeah, so that's good to know. I'll watch you on that. Boots, nobody could carry those boots that many miles, could they? Or can they?
Well, some people do. I don't personally, just because I don't want to have the risk of, in case it falls off or breaks or rubs, where if it's glued right onto the hoof, I know I'm good. It's going to stay there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If the speeds were going, I just can't afford to then change my game plan if it falls off and start walking. So
yeah, of course, of course. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience with Liger and Flagazette Farms? He is one gorgeous individual. I wish people could see him right here. We should probably put a photo in the show notes.
Yeah,
but
he's doing wonderfully. He came here to Florida after Monty started him and started going out and getting conditioned for the racetrack. Mm-hmm. And he is actually right now up in Delaware getting prepared to run up there with a trainer named Lynn Ashby. And she likes him a lot, so we'll see what happens. Hopefully he can do it. His stride length is huge. He's pretty smart.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's racing. There you go. But he is an amazing, he's got that capacity, that lung capacity. That chest was amazing. He was very quick to pick everything up. And his stride, just in that round pin, it's a 50-foot round pin. I don't know if you knew what the diameter of it was. And he seemed to take in about 4 strides. And he's not that big. Not that big. It was amazing. Yeah. And he's purebred Arabian, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's all of 16 hands, actually a hair over 16 hands.
Amazing. Yeah, he looks like a thoroughbred in so many ways, yeah. Except he's got that beautiful nose in the air, drinker of the wind, Arabian look, you know, which we all know and love about him. And we would love to follow. Did you get to watch the Derby on Saturday?
I didn't because I was riding a 75-mile race that day.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I couldn't squeeze it in, I imagine.
Yeah. Well,
it was kind of fun because we did have a California thoroughbred win that race and are familiar with the team and everything, too. But, you know, that our first love, when at least when I was growing up with the thoroughbreds, was training those. So it was fun to see Liger on the farm training with just like a thoroughbred would be trained to go through the starting gates and to become conditioned and quiet and a happy racer. So it was fun to have.
Yes, and that starting gate lesson that Monty gave him stuck with him because he is very quiet now when he walks through the gates and has morning workouts. So that really helped.
Good to hear. Yeah, we'll have to explain to people that Dad uses a hallway system. He puts up panels so they walk through and walk through, walk out, walk through. Just incremental, so that there just isn't any fuss once they, I mean, that's the plan anyway, there isn't any fuss when it comes to the
well,
real
thing. It works because he understood.
That's terrific. Well, what's the most fun thing you've done so far in 2014? I love your life. What have you been up to?
Let's see, in 2014, I don't know, this past weekend was pretty fun at the Biltmore just because the estate is so beautiful and it's so well manicured and you ride by the mansion a bunch of times and we had a great weekend. We took 5 horses. They all completed. The 2 I rode won both their races and got best condition.
Oh,
and the others all came into the top 10. So it was a great weekend.
Oh, that is a great weekend. I don't know. Maybe you should quit right there. Go for it. Before we let you go, Heather, we've got to ask about this spot that you're vying for on the USA WEG. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So the way it's going this year is all of the riders that are in the USA that are trying to go to the WEG had to go to a time trial where the soundness and fitness was evaluated on their nominated horses. So Jeremy and I each took our horses. I'm nominated on a horse named Chances, and he's nominated on a horse named Gold Dust Rising. So that whole weekend went really well for us. Unfortunately, they had to collaborate, the selectors, the chef to keep. The chef to keep is the coach, team captain. Mm-hmm. And the team veterinarian, they all have to collaborate their notes from the weekend, and then they're going to do one more soundness evaluation on all of the horses, and then they're going to get together again and have a bunch of committee meetings, and then they will tell us by the end of June, in ranked order, who the top 10 are. And then from that top 10, another later date, they'll pick the actual eventual 5. There's only going to be 5 from the whole U.S. chosen. So hopefully we have at least one horse, if not 2, in that mix.
Wow. What an opportunity. Great. Well, thank you. Well, you know what? We will be rooting for you from this side. So you need some prayers.
That's great. I can use all the rooting I can get.
That's right. Good. Well, we'll tell everybody that. Thank you for adding that too. And we'll have you back for that tip. Thanks again, Heather Reynolds. Today's trainer's tip is from Julie Malik of Velvet Touch Equine Training. Welcome back, Julie Malik. Thank you again for coming back to Horsemanship Radio and giving us a little training tip from Julie's perspective.
It's my pleasure to be here again. Thanks for asking me back. I think what I would like to impart as a tip is eye contact. You know, when I'm working with someone, especially someone that's new to horses, one of the things that I look at first as far as how they handle their horses, what they're doing with their eyes. And it's so important from the horse's perspective, both to be able to see their handler's eyes. So, you know, lose the sunglasses. But also what it is that you're doing with your eyes. And I think most people don't realize how big of an effect that can have as far as making a horse nervous or making them comfortable, depending on what you're doing with your eyes at the time.
That's great. So how does that affect your horse, negatively and positively?
Well, I'll give you a for instance. If, as most people do, when you're in a conversation with another person, you tend to lock your eyes on their eyes. It's a human thing. You know, it's mm-hmm. accepted as I'm paying attention. Mm-hmm. But when a horse sees you lock your eyes on their eyes, they look at it very differently for two reasons. One is that they're a prey animal, and when they see another, when they see a predator, such as ourselves, because we are predators, mm-hmm. lock eyes, that means I'm coming after you.
Yikes.
I may eat you. And so mm-hmm. they want to move away. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think most people don't realize is, number one, you know, you have to observe the very obvious fact that horses are prey animals. They get eaten. And their instinct is to survive and run away if they feel threatened. Mm-hmm. Horses aren't afraid of predators, as Dr. Robert Miller says. They're afraid of predatory behavior. And as predators, humans have to take the upper hand when trying to deal with horses and sort of reprogram themselves to take away some of that predatory behavior in order to make their horses feel more comfortable. So when I see a new person walk up and they want to go rub on the horse and, you know, love on the horse, but they're looking the horse right in the eye, what I see is the horse may just even make a subtle shift away, or they may move their head away, or they may just, depending on how sensitive they are, they may actually take steps away because they think, oh my gosh, this predator is coming after me. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things that I train people to do is, no, if you want that horse to stand and be comfortable with you, go up and have a soft eye. Don't look them in the eye. You know, keep your body language soft, but mostly don't lock that eye on eye thing, because that's such a predatorial action. And mm-hmm. they read that. They're so sensitive as far mm-hmm. as what we do with our eyes, what we do with our bodies. They have to be. It's their survival instinct.
Yeah, it's still in the DNA, isn't it? Now, I can hear all those women out there sighing, going, oh, but I think my horse likes me to look him in the eye. He lets me come and give a good hug on his muzzle. And, you know, is it okay if I do it with my horse?
Well, they may have been conditioned to ignore that, but I challenge them to, you know, take a look. When this horse is nervous about something, you know, does that woman want to make their horse feel as comfortable as possible, or do they want to just have that horse have to overcome another thing in their environment besides what it is that's making them nervous, like the plastic bag or whatever? Mm-hmm. So why give them more to have to overcome when it's just so easy to retrain yourself to use your eyes in a more appropriate fashion to make your horse comfortable? For me, that's really important. That's one of the most important things.
That's a good tip, Julie. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. So we're all going to go home and try that in our barns and see what results, and we'll get back to you on that.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Yeah. Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty is looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged, in May. In Solvang, California, May 31, a night of inspiration with Monty at Flagazette Farms in Solvang. There's limited spaces now, so book early and write to admin@montyroberts.com or call 805-688-6288 for reservations. And you can see more details on his Facebook page. And on June 1, we have a life lessons workshop at Flagazette Farms. There's information on our website. And again, you can write admin@montyroberts.com or call 805-688-6288. And everybody should be looking at August 4 through 8 for Monty's special training, my favorite week of the year, at Flagazette Farms in Solvang, California.
You can see more at MontyRoberts.com, and you can also find Monty's calendar there as well. We also put links in our show notes, and we put links to all of our guests. If you've missed past episodes, you can go to HorsemanshipRadio.com, where you can find the links, the photos, and all of the sound files for the past shows. You can go take a listen there. And we also you can find us on the Horse Radio Network app. Just search for go to the App Store, whether it's iOS or Android, either one. Go to the App Store on your phone or your iPad and search for Horse Radio Network. It's the easiest, simplest way to listen to the shows. And we also love your feedback. Please follow us on Facebook under facebook.com/Monty Roberts and Twitter at twitter.com/Monty_Roberts. We also like to thank our sponsors, wouldn't we?
We always do. IFA.com and Monty Roberts University. Be sure to visit all the other great shows, too, on Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com. And until next time, have many happy horse hours.
Well, John Katz, as I said, has written many books, mostly about his animals and his life on the farm, and Bedlam Farm is the name of it, and appropriately so. If you read his books, you understand how he got the name Bedlam Farm. And, you know, I respect him so much, and he's recently got into the New York carriage driving situation, which I'm sure he'll tell us about. But he had a blog, and he's been writing many blog articles, has huge listener or readership to his blog. But he says it better. He says everything that Wendy and I have been saying all along here about the situation. And we get flamed every time we talk about this because there are those people out there, even horse people, who believe that the horses shouldn't be in the city. You know, and I want to talk to him a lot more about this today and really get into this because he was just there last week.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent time there, and right. He's seen the stables. He's been there a number of times, and he's done more research than any reporter has on this topic. Yeah. And he was a reporter for major newspapers before he got into writing books. But let's talk to John Katz and find out more about him, his books, and also how he feels about the New York situation and animals in general. Well, hi, John. Welcome to the Driving Radio Show.
Well, hi, Glenn and Wendy. Thank you for having me on.
I can't tell you how thrilled I am to speak with you. My wife, Jennifer, and I have been fans of yours since way back in cassette tape days. you know, that's like 100 years ago.
Yeah, that's the last century.
It kind of does seem like that long since you wrote your first book, because you've been writing books for so long.
That's true.
We lived through the days when you were a city boy and got your first dog, and then your dogs led to moving out on the farm, and then the farm led to other animals, and then it led to donkeys and cat and big, you know, big steers and all that stuff, and sheep, and then more dogs. So we've lived through it all with you. And I got to be honest, when you first moved out to the farm and started writing those books, and we would so wait for your book to come out because we wanted to know what happened next.
And me too.
And it was your life. I mean, that's the thing. You had to wait to see what happened next too. So
that's exactly.
But when
I made a decision when I moved upstate that I was going to share my life. That was what the books were going to be, and it was a good decision. It was a really interesting decision, and I got more and more into animals, paying attention to them, studying them, and I love where I live. I love being in the country. I love the area I live in. I love the life I'm living. I'm very lucky.
But after that first winter or two, we had a bet that you would move back to the city.
Oh, really?
Right. We lost.
Well, it was it's like Joseph Campbell says on The Hero's Journey, you know, you set out in search of yourself and you either fall into a dark hole, and if you're lucky, you climb out. And if you're not, you don't ever come out again. So there were some wild times, but it was a good thing. It was a lifesaver, a great move for me. I never have regretted it.
Well, I'll tell you, everybody that is listening right now has lived through the things you've lived through because we all have farms. So,
right.
You know, we've all dealt with everything that you've dealt with in the books. And Dog Year was one of the first ones about the dogs, right?
That was the first one about the dogs.
That's what I thought. Okay. And that was back in what year?
Well, it wasn't that long ago. It was probably around 2000. Maybe 2000.
Yeah.
And 2001.
But that was the one. If you know, I recommend every horse person go back and start at Dog Year, and then go through the chronology of books that he has done, and follow John's life through all of these animals, and you just express it how we all think it and live it every day.
Well, that's a beautiful thing to hear. You know, I actually think I've learned in my own life. You know, there's a great divide in the country between agricultural, rural, and farm people. And urban people when it comes to animals. You know, I see it all over the horse stories, the horse carriage story. But it comes up all the time. I'm lambing right now. And you know, the people, there are people who have pets and there are people who have animals. And the two sides are coming wider and wider apart from one another. And I have both, really. I have some animals that are pets and some animals that are working animals. And I do have a farm. I'm not a farmer. I'm a writer with a farm, but still. And it's just a different world. And it used to be the agricultural world was a huge and big part of America. And now most of America lives in cities and suburbs along the coast. And they're losing touch with the natural world. They're losing touch with animals. They're certainly losing touch with farms and agriculture. And you see this schism very clearly when it comes to animals, where, you know, the fantasized idea of animals as being, you know, pets that live perfect lives has become so entrenched that it's become almost a cultural civil war.
You're right about that. And, you know, when we had a farm that we raised our own beef, and, you know, we actually, for the first couple of years, butchered our own cows, which, by the way, I'll never do again.
Yeah,
we finally figured out for $80 the butcher shop would do it, and it'd come back frozen. And we were like,
yeah.
Okay, well, that's
much
sold.
Easier.
But, you know, you're absolutely right about that is, you know, most of us have lived through, at least those of us that are a little bit older, have lived through actually having a working farm where we had chickens for eggs, you know, and chickens for chicken and all of that stuff. We lived through all of that stuff. But
yeah, a farm is teaches you about life. A farm is teaches you about the real world of real animals. And if you did, you know, the story you just told me, if you said that in New York City, you know, they would be in big trouble. There would be, people would think you were just a monster.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
as
we had a lambing.
As they go down to buy their burger at the grocery store.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, they've lost touch with food. They don't know where it comes from. And they've just lost touch with the natural world. So part of this comes from the idea that they have no idea what it's really like. And the other thing is that all their whole view of animals, it's increasingly shaped by the emotionalizing of pets. You know, the rescue movement is a huge, huge movement in America now. And the whole idea of animals has sort of been hijacked by the group that calls themselves the animal rights movement. There's a huge difference between their view of animals and the view of every person who lives with them. So you have a movement that's supposed to speak for animals that actually is detested by almost everyone who has one. And it's a tough spot for animals, really. It's also a tough spot for the people who have them. Because increasingly they find themselves being targeted in a way that is very unjust and very unfair and sometimes almost frightening. So that's what I kind of wandered into in New York with the horse story. But it happens on my farm. I'm sure it happened on your farm. I'm lambing right now, and I had one lamb was stillborn. And I'm just getting, you know, roasted on the internet daily from people. Why don't you give her another lamb? Take one of the other lambs from the other years and give it to her. You know, it's like, whoa, you can't do that. Animals are like us. They have troubles. They have accidents. They don't live forever. So this idea is being lost. And I think it's important, especially for someone like me, to just write about what the reality of the animal world is. You know, there's no such thing as a no-kill farm, you know.
Well, you know, that's interesting that what you said about the lambs there, and Wendy can probably speak to this as a veterinarian too. Chances are, and this is somebody that really doesn't understand animals, chances are that mama wouldn't take to another lamb anyway, or wouldn't want it.
Well, certainly not, and the mother would try to kill, you know, the ewe would try to kill the one who took her baby. It's a very kind, there's just no reason to do it. She lost her lamb, she's moved on, she's not in mourning. You know, and life happens to animals, like it happens to us. So I like the idea. I've learned that animals are my partners. They're not my piteous little wards. And you know, life happens to me and life happens to them, and we have to acclimate. And I think veterans, you know, veterinarians who I talk to all the time, they're here unfortunately quite often, become good friends.
Financially, but, you know, and emotionally.
Right. They're just there. I have to call them again. And they're heroic to me. They've made such a big difference in my life on many levels. But you know, they understand this better than anybody, and they understand what it's like. They're very supportive. They understand the limits of life. You know, people with farm animals have only so much resources, only so much money, only so much time. And their people need to be supported or there won't be any animals. You know, I think that's the big issue that's becoming clear is if the animal world is held to these insane standards of life, nobody will be able to have one. And that's what I'm seeing in these fights that are cropping up all over the country. And you certainly see it in the carriage horse conflict.
Wendy, you've seen this, I'm sure, in your practice.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think that you hit the nail on the head about the time thing. I think these people that don't have any pets, you know, that live in an apartment, that don't even have to mow their lawn or do anything outside, don't even understand the time and work it takes just to keep up the farm. So they think, oh, well, people, you have land. You could take in all these helpless animals. Well, you know what? Try feeding 20 horses every morning.
Oh, you know,
I mean, that just that alone, that is like such an emotional stress. I have had some clients that, you know, you can just see they just can't keep up with it, even though they want to. You know, it's not just the money. It's the time. It's the space. It's
and the energy.
The energy. Yeah. So they'll never understand that.
Yeah, both. Yeah.
We just had four lambs, which wasn't much, and nearly killed all of us. It was really
yeah. And also another thing that non-animal owners don't understand is, like, well, you've just been lambing, so you haven't slept in who knows how long.
Yeah.
Right?
They don't
understand this is a 24/7 job. Yeah. You know, like dogs and horses and everything gets sick in the middle of the night, and if they get sick in the middle of the night, you have to stay up. You can't, you know, say, oh, I'm tired.
No
I'm going to go
horse
to sleep.
Has ever colicked in the daytime.
No, or had a baby in the middle of the day.
No, it's true. And I think it's hard enough to have an animal, let alone have to have an animal that can never get sick and never get injured and never die.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think what I'm seeing is more and more people are saying, you know what, I this is hard enough. I can't take this additional grief. You know, when I see what drew me into the carriage horse story was seeing what those people have been through mm-hmm. for 7 or 8 years now. They're attacked almost daily.
Tell us, you were just there. So let's take that as an example. I read a little bit of your article today, mostly about the animal rights side of things.
Right, that's the last one, right.
But you were there. What did you see on the street with the carriages? You were just there this last week.
Well, I've been there probably maybe 9 or 10 times since January, and I've become quite involved in it. And I went down because I saw this contract, been contacted by a bunch of groups wanting maybe to sign a petition to ban the horses. And so I just hadn't paid much attention to it. I was vaguely aware of many, many images for years on the internet of horses dying and being run over and being tortured and looking awful. And I had this general sense that this was a rough industry where the horses were just not treated well. I didn't know anything about it. I just the impression I had, like everyone else had. So I just said, okay, I used to be a reporter. I emailed the head of the carriage stable. I said, can I come down there? And they said, sure, come down anytime. You can see anything you want anytime. Just show up. And that surprised me. I went down there to the largest stable, the Clinton Park stable. And I just walked in the door and I said, I'm here, you know, I have a blog, I'm an author. And they said, well, come on in. And I went up to everything. I saw the whole stall. They weren't expecting me. Nothing was prepared for me. And I saw these, you know, really healthy, shiny, you know, alert animals. And my horse vet had given me a list of things to look for in terms of gauging, you know, their alertness and well-being. And it was just ridiculous. You know, these are among the best cared for animals anywhere. Incredibly closely regulated. They get 5 weeks of vacation a year. They work 6 hours a day. They can't work in the heat. They can't work in the cold. And the stables are cleaned every 3 hours. And I was just shocked.
Can they come clean mine every 3 hours?
I know.
I know. I said, my God, my poor donkey.
Don't tell my guys.
Donkeys. and you know, there. And I saw these list of allegations against them. And I called up the police and I said, okay, How many horses have been abused in the last year? And they said, none. I said, how many in the last 150 years? They said, nobody's been arrested for abuse ever. And I couldn't believe it. I said, well, how many people have called and asked you about this? They said, you're the first one. So this just completely blew my mind. And so I started going through these statistics. There have been four or five accidents involving horses over the last 30 years. None in the last 20 years, really, that were serious. And four horses have died in that time in 3 million trips. And in New York City, every year, 300 people are killed in traffic accidents. And 15,000 are hit in collisions of one kind or another every year. So I was seeing what I call this moral inversion, you know, and everybody in the animal rights people are saying, well, these horses should be in the wild. And first of all, there is no wild, as you know. And secondly, these are big draft horses. They've never been in the wild. They've always been in stables. They've always worked with people. And the work they do is incredibly light. These, you know, 1,700 pound horses are pulling these very light carriages with rubber rims on flat ground. And it was just amazing to me that nothing I had heard bore any reality to what I was seeing or what the statistics bore out. You know, the New York Times was 8 blocks from these stables, and no reporter had ever walked 8 blocks to take a look. So I just felt very strongly about it. First, I felt, as a human being, this was unjust. This was an injustice to see these people battered this way. And then as an animal lover and someone who writes about animals, I said, wait a minute, you know, if they run these horses out this way, everybody with an animal, everybody with a horse, you know, I have a border collie, and my border collie, by this standard, is abused because work is considered abuse by them. So animals should never work. And they're trying not only to ban the horses, but to make it illegal for the owners of the horses to sell them to anyone who would have them work. So they could only go to rescue farms where they could basically stand around all day and eliminate and dump manure. So this idea of animals as being so fragile and so precious that they can only exist on rescue farms, you know, it's not just about the horses. The agenda of this movement is really to push animals away from people, away from circuses, away from research, away from, they don't like farmers, they don't like the agricultural world, they don't like pet owners, they don't like breeders. And, you know, the Cook County, Chicago just passed a law making it illegal to buy a dog from a breeder. You have to go to a rescue group. So this is a government interference in private lives. And
are
it's
you
also
kidding?
Going to lead...
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, the Cook County government just
which
did
is
that.
Chicago.
Cook County, Chicago. And you can't buy a dog in Chicago. It's probably going to get overturned, I would bet you. But you know, the government supports it. You know, the mayor of New York, who's pushing this ban, has never had a dog. He's never had a cat. He's never owned an animal. He's never been near a horse. And so these people making judgments about animals know absolutely nothing about them. And, you know, a platoon of veterinarians, equine vets from all over the region, have gone into stables to check it out. Every one of them has said this, the horses are great. They wish all the horses were treated like this. And so if these horses get banned, you know, Wendy, you know this, both of you know this, you're going to have 220 draft horses sent out into the world where 155,000 horses are slaughtered every year. So, you know, there's no room for 220 of these draft horses on rescue farms. So you're actually literally saving them in order to have most of them killed. So it's completely irrational, and it needs to be written about in my mind. So I got quite into it, as you can tell.
Oh, and I love your posts about it. And, you know, this is one of Wendy and I get flamed every time we talk about this topic on the show. And we've lost some listeners from it. And to be honest, we don't care. Because, you know, I have always said this goes beyond, first of all, the real reason this is happening has nothing to do with the horses. It has everything to do with money and politics. Everything always comes back to money and politics in one way or another. And the other thing that I was really concerned about this is it's really not about New York. It's what you're saying. It's about everything in general. It's the slippery slope. Because after they're done with New York, they're going to go after Wendy driving CDEs because the marathon's dangerous.
Absolutely.
You know, and the horses have to pull those poor carriages through the water and, you know, around obstacles. And, you know, it's just one step toward the next step, toward the next step, toward you're right. We'll be able to do nothing with animals. By the way, I own a greyhound, and there's nothing our greyhound loves to do more than go out in the field and run at 35 miles an hour. That dog loves to run, has the biggest smile when it's running. If we didn't let it ever run again, and that's what greyhounds do, it would be the most miserable dog anywhere.
Well, I have the same thing with the border collie. You know, my border collie does work in hot weather. He works in cold weather. He gets battered around quite a bit. He runs into barbed wire. He gets his paws cut. He's great friends with the local vet. They know each other very well. And, you know, that's the life of a border collie. And the standard of this is this is considered abuse. I mean, running your greyhound is considered abuse. So, again, this is not out of any knowledge of animals. It comes out of a political idea, a fancy idea about animals. And it's filled with irony. You know, I did this piece. I don't know if you saw one of them. I did. I said, you know, the horses should really go and picket an Amazon workers' warehouse if they want to improve working conditions. Because I compared the working conditions in an Amazon warehouse with the carriage horses. The Amazon workers don't get 5 weeks vacation. They work 11 hours a day. You know, they don't get three breaks a day. And they work in the heat, they work in the cold, and they work until they drop. So, you know, this whole is an inverted morality, you know, that you know, it's a complete fantasy about, you know, the power in politics are definitely there in New York. You know, you can see it. But I also think people are not aware, I was not aware, of the ideological nature of this movement, which is incredibly well-funded. Mostly by Hollywood movie stars who give them millions of dollars. They really intend in their own way to remove animals from the world, because they don't believe it's safe or appropriate for them to be around people. And that's the core of what they believe. They don't, you know, they're going after pony rides. They're going after animals in the circus, and they're succeeding in many, many levels. I talked to these kids at a University of Massachusetts in Amherst. They have a farm training school, and the students have to hide their curriculum. They can't talk about the farm because they send chickens out for meat. And so the kids have all been attacked. They've had their cell phones hacked and put on the internet, their contacts. And the teachers tell them, don't tell anybody where you're learning. Don't tell anybody you're on the farm course. So this is not a democratic movement. This is a disturbing movement in many, many ways.
I also doubt the Humane Society bigwigs even care that much about their movement. It doesn't even matter what they're talking about. They care about how they can keep their salaries high from getting donations from people just, you know, by tugging on their heartstrings. For me, it's like this movement is, I remember when I was a little kid, my grandmother used to watch the 700 Club. You remember 700
yes.
Club?
Oh, yeah.
And I think Tammy, that was Tammy Faye, right?
Yeah.
And I would say, Nana, why are you giving these people money? And she's like, don't you love Jesus? Don't you want to help starving kids in Africa? You know, those people didn't do any of that. Those people just lined their pockets with money they begged from grandmas on a budget because they made them feel guilty about some cause that was not even what they're raising money for. That's exactly what the Humane Society is doing. And anytime anyone speaks badly about it, they say, don't you love animals?
Right.
So what's the response to that? Of course I love animals.
The really important issue that's coming out of New York, it's interesting, is that, you know, this is the, you know, they've been putting up pictures of horses lying in the street for years.
And it's been the same horse, by the way.
Same horse, and some of them are from New York and some of them are not.
Yeah.
But people on the internet see a picture of a horse lying on the street, and it's just as Wendy's saying, it's very upsetting to them. So they sign a petition and they send money. But this is the first time really in American history, though, that this movement has elected a mayor who is one of their members. And the mayor of New York, Mayor de Blasio, is a member of this movement. He's not simply, he took a lot of money from them. They donated $1.3 million to different candidates. They elected him. They gave him enough money to turn his campaign around. And so he's very beholden to them, but he also is one of them. I mean, he's not simply doing it for the money. He really believes that it's really cruel for a working horse to work. The interesting thing, though, and it's important, I think, for everybody's morale, is that the city of New York has overwhelmingly and very suddenly rejected this. You know, in January, when I got into it, the polls were like 3-1 against keeping the horses. They've completely reversed themselves. All three newspapers have supported the carriage horses. The Teamsters have joined up with the Chamber of Commerce for the first time ever to oppose the ban. All the business company people have done it. Liam Neeson, the movie star, has been very, very influential in speaking out on behalf of the horses. So it's turned around. It's almost becoming now the opposite of what it was, because people have never really got a look at this movement before. And in New York, where there's all this media, people are beginning to pay attention for the first time and say, wait a minute. You know, the horses aren't abused. It isn't cruel for a working horse to work. And, you know, you see how much people love them there. This is a 300 people working and 220 horses. So I think the good news here, people like me have to speak up about it, have to start talking about it, and have to start writing about it. I've paid no attention to this because it didn't really affect me. So I think that needs to change. And I think even my readers, you know, my blog has like 4 million hits a year. It's gotten very big around the country. And overwhelmingly, I mean, I've definitely gotten flamed a bit, but not much. But overwhelmingly, my readers are saying, well, we didn't know this.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's an awakening about what animal rights really are. To me, the major right of an animal is to survive and to remain in our world. And, you know, my motto is you take care of them the best you can for as long as you can, which a vet taught me. And, you know, some of them can live forever and some of them can't. But you take the best care you can. That's the realistic standard. And they don't need to be on rescue farms. They need to be with people who will find things for them to do. In America, animals that work survive, and animals that don't work don't survive. And so saving them is not about banishing them from the city. It's about keeping them there. But this is really something I can't tell you how many people have said to me, I never thought of it that way. So I think in the carriage trade people who were very honest about this, you know, these are immigrants mostly and the grandkids of immigrants. They're working class people. They love the horses. They're very good to them. But they're not media savvy. So they had no idea of how to respond to this irrational series of attacks. So now they're waking up. They've got their blogs going. They're taking pictures. They got Liam Neeson to come in and talk about them. And mm-hmm. they're putting on a movie on YouTube at 9 o'clock that Liam Neeson is narrating. So they're getting media savvy, and as they're doing that, they're getting a good response. I mean, they've really turned it around. I think it'd be very hard for the mayor it's very hard for the mayor to ban them right now, which I would have said in January would be a foregone conclusion. So there is a bit of a silver lining there.
Well, there's a lot more from John to come right after this word from my favorite carriage company, Fry Carriage Company. Fry Carriage Company is my carriage company of choice. If you are looking for the finest competition, pleasure, or restored carriages, then Fry Carriage Company is the place to go. Their new Stingray is one of the hottest competition carriages for 2014, and the Sprint Cart is perfect for people like me who just want a reliable, adjustable cart to drive around for hoots and giggles. Be sure to check their website or Facebook page, as they always have some fantastic specials going on. Google Fry Carriage Company today or follow them on Facebook. Just search for Fry Carriage Company. If you have a Fry carriage, drop Wendy and I a note and let us know how you'd like it. We'd love to hear from you.
You know, I think also you're a great messenger for this movement because, as you said, you were a member of the animal rights movement and your own steer was used in their campaign.
Yes, yes.
You know,
I had no idea what I was doing mm-hmm. on any level, even including having a steer. But it's true. The Humane Society contacted me and they said, we'd love to have him as a poster boy. I thought, well, that's cute. You know, it's nice. Everybody wants to do that. I would not do that today.
Yeah.
You know, I think they've gone to the dark side with the ASPCA with them. They're not friends of animals and they're not supporting the rights of animals. They're just collecting money.
Yeah.
And I think that's also something, as you pointed out, Wendy, that people don't know.
Yeah, I think if people knew how much that their upper level management was getting paid and how much they spend on, like what kind of organization has $1.3 million to spend on a mayoral campaign?
Right.
They could build some shelters.
How many horses would that have saved?
Right.
That money.
Yeah. You know, well, this is very timely, too, because the Humane Society just finally lost that court battle against Feld Entertainment, the Ringling Brothers people, over that whole elephant thing that they've been suing for years, and they lost $15 million to cover the court. That was just to cover the lawyer fees for Ringling Brothers over the past 10 years, and basically it came out they paid people to lie in court.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, they're, once again, you know, it's that. It's the same thing as the horses in New York. It's the same thing they have been trying to do to the circus people for years.
Well, you know, and I don't know if you follow the story I wrote about. I'm getting, of course, now contacted from people all over the country, but the poor woman in California who has gave pony rides in Santa Monica. And for years, she's a farmer, and she supports herself in part by bringing her ponies and her alpacas to the farmer's market so they can give rides to children.
Mm-hmm.
So a month ago, she found herself being picketed by animal rights organizations for abuse. They think it was abusive to have ponies give rides to children and have to listen to loud music in the background.
Oh, my God.
And so I got contacted by this 11-year-old girl, God bless her, who has a Facebook page. And this, the animal rights groups had a petition of 150 signatures to shut down this woman. Lovely woman. You know, she brings the animals in part to educate kids who've never seen animals. She doesn't make a lot of money on it.
Yeah, no, I know her, actually. Like, I don't know her well, but my family lives right around the corner from her. And I can tell you right now that that is the best part of the farmer's market. There's tons of kids there. She brings baby bunnies, ducks.
Right. And
the place is chickens. It's so clean. The animals are clean. And they're just in this little area where the kids are having fun having a pony ride. There's nothing wrong with that. It's wonderful the kids get that.
And she couldn't keep a pony if she couldn't do that. She wouldn't be able to do it. But what happened is these kids, they contacted me. I put up on the blog, and they got 700 signatures on their petition to keep them.
Oh, that's great.
And so they stopped it. You know, I mean, it's still going to go on, but they actually, you know, came back very quickly, you know, because kids understand how to use social media, and farm people generally don't.
Well, you know what's sad is if that pony wasn't there at that farmer's market, those kids would never see a live horse.
Right.
Yeah.
And the ponies would probably have to, she probably couldn't keep the ponies either.
I know. Because we think it's expensive in Florida to keep horses. You just try to keep a horse in Santa Monica.
California. Yeah.
And, but, you know, the idea of an animal rights movement should be to support people who are keeping animals and not attack them.
But you know what else? I bet they had to go find those people. They probably paid those 150 people, because every time I'm in Santa Monica, I go to that farmer's market. And that is the most popular attraction there. There's kids, there's families. I would think that they would have to go, and they probably paid those people to come pick it. Those probably were not Santa Monica residents.
Well, you're probably right. But the other thing is true is, you know, people see a picture, who knows what pictures they saw, and they automatically go, well, I have to help an animal.
Right.
I mean, they don't even know what helping an animal is.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, I actually had this remarkable experience last week where there's a Chief Admiral Looking Horse, who's one of the head of the Sioux Nation. He's taken up this cause of the carriage horses, and he came to New York to have a prayer day for them. And he talked about the importance of them remaining in our world from the perspective of the Native American, which I'd never heard that really before. It was a very interesting experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
But he spoke at the UN about it the next day. So, you know, there are a lot of people, there are crews from Scandinavia, from England, from, you know, this has become a big issue around the world among people who are following animals. I don't know if you guys happen to see this Spartacus story, but it was a very interesting turning point for me. After you followed it, this Spartacus, a carriage horse, they pulled the horse, one carriage pulled out ahead of another, and the two rear wheels got caught. One carriage flipped over, and the horse tripped and fell to the ground. And it took about 2 minutes. They took the harness off. They calmed the horse. They got him up, and he was fine. A vet checked him out. That's not a scratch on him. So there was somebody who they claim was a tourist, but who seemed to be an animal rights worker, took a picture of the horse. And they claimed that he had been hit by a bus, and they claimed that the driver said, I don't care about the horse. I just want to save the carriage. And this became a huge to-do in New York. There were dozens of reporters, and the mayor weighed in on it. And I got involved in it because there were a whole bunch of my blog readers there who were also taking pictures, happened to see it. You know, and what happened is the horse fell down and got up. That's basically what happened. And nothing happened. There was no bus. And the driver is an Italian immigrant who speaks no English. He couldn't have said those things.
Mm-hmm.
They held one rally after another for a week about how horrible it is for the horses to be there. So you have this group that nothing about the story was true. Every politician in the city was screaming about it. All the media embraced it and accepted it without thinking about it. And it was days before the other side could even get out. So I think that's the intensity of this conflict in New York right now, where there's not really much respect for truth or facts. And unfortunately, journalism doesn't really execute its role anymore of checking things out. They just take these accusations and they throw them up. But despite all of that, I think they're turning it around. Despite all of that, I think the horses are going to stay there, at least for now.
And thanks to people like Eva Hughes, has been on our show 50 times over the last couple of years, and people like her up there in New York, who are really the ones leading the way, and they have no money. You know, they're not well funded like the other side. And they're just out there telling the truth, and you got to hope that in today's world that the truth still overcomes the falsities of another side. You got to hope that if it doesn't, then we're in sad shape. And I think you've kind of said that in a couple of your articles too.
The truth matters. I've seen Eva Hughes on the internet. She's quite a warrior. I don't want to tangle with her. I'll tell you that. but you also know when you meet these people. You see the toll this has taken on them. I mean, it's really wrong. They've lived with this attack and harassment for years, and been accused of everything from thievery to abuse to all kinds of crimes. And I was talking to somebody. One of my readers was outraged at what I was writing and said, it's obvious the horses are being abused. And I said, look, abuse is not an argument. Abuse is a crime. And if anyone has any evidence that these horses are being abused, you need to call the police immediately and tell them, because no one has done that. And this whole idea of what abuse is has become lost. And I mean, Wendy, I'm sure, sees real abuse when she goes to some of these places. And I've had animals who have been genuinely abused.
Mm-hmm.
And abuse doesn't even apply to animals that are well-fed and well-treated and housed. It doesn't even apply.
Well, also, what about mental abuse? Like you were talking about your border collie?
Yep.
The worst abuse that I see are people that have dogs in the subdivision, and they get them because they're cute, and they keep a border collie or a Jack Russell in a crate for 18 hours a day while they're at work or driving their kids to ballet or whatever, and then get mad at it because it's crazy and chewing their sofa legs.
That's the life of most labs in America now, as you mm-hmm. probably know. These big hunting dogs, working dogs, who spend their whole lives in little backyards. And getting neurotic and nuts.
Yeah.
But that is the real abuse. And I think the challenge is to now begin reclaiming this movement. I mean, I think, veterinarians in particular, authors, writers, media people, animal lovers have to begin redefining what rights of animals are. And, it's not the human style rights, or this fantasy kind of right. It's basically the right to, I think it's become the right to simply exist in our world. And that's going to be a fight, I think. It's going to be a battle. I do think, however, I can see from the response I've been getting, everything I write about this gets about 5,000 shares on Facebook. The people are riled up. I mean, animal lovers are going to fight for the, like Eva Hughes is a great example. People are going to fight for this. And I think they just haven't realized what the nature of the fight is. Most animal lovers have been supporting these groups, not understanding what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as awareness deepens, and I think you see it in New York, which is the biggest stage in the country, really, the public is not buying this stuff. They're basically saying, wait a minute, we don't want the horses to go. And the mayor's now in a pickle about it.
Well, and same with our listeners. When we started talking about this years ago, most of the listeners didn't know anything about it and didn't care. And I think now they realize, just think about this. Somebody comes into your farm and tells you can no longer ride your horse or drive your horse or do anything with your horse anymore. You're just going to feed it and clean up after it, and that's it. And you're saying, well, that's going to never happen. Well, that's the slippery slope we're talking about. That's what John's saying. That's what they want to happen. So you have to put it on your, I'm looking out at my pony right now who drives, and he's a little 13 hand pony. And yes, he pulls my fat butt around and he does it. And he loves it when the harness gets on. He just can't wait to go to work. And, I just can't imagine somebody coming in and telling me I can never do that with my horse. So imagine that you're sitting there at your farm and somebody does that to you. That's what we're talking about here.
Or, we're talking about labs and hunting. We're talking about border collies and herding sheep. And what about the therapy dogs? And what about the bomb-sniffing dogs of Amtrak? What about mm-hmm. police horses? The whole range of, I had a very powerful email from a woman in the Bronx who said, I wish the horses would come up here. I wish the horses would work with our kids. I wish our kids could see the horses. If you stand with the carriage horses in New York for a couple of hours, you see this parade of children coming up to touch them. I've been taking pictures of it. I've been putting it up in the last few days. it's a very beautiful thing to see how much people touch these animals, want to touch them and feel them and just see them. And I said to this woman whose kid was from the Bronx, you know, who loved the horses, saw them on television, and the woman said, I'm so glad she got off of Facebook and wanted to see something real. And I said, well, what would happen, do you think, if the horses leave? And she said, it's just what Glenn said. She'll never see a horse again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot at stake there, I think, for everybody who has any animals in their lives, for the sporting people and the hunting people. And, you know, people have rights, too, but mostly for people who are willing to endure the expense and difficulty that Wendy's talking about and then get attacked for it. They're just not going to do it. You know, I talked to a woman in Hollywood who's on the commission, you know, to make sure animals are humanely treated in movies. And she said that they're sending off all the horses they used in movies to slaughter because the producers don't want to use them anymore because they're being attacked so relentlessly by the animal rights movement. That's just not worth it to them. So these animals who've really essentially been kept alive for this work are getting killed because they don't want to risk the trouble of using them. There's just so much at stake on so many levels about this story, you know, that it's very, very important to be talking about it. And you guys obviously have been doing it for years, but I'm a newcomer to it, but definitely lit me up.
Well, you have a bigger audience, so thank you for doing it. We appreciate it because I personally want to keep driving my pony. And yes. I know Wendy.
And Glenn,
would like to
you know
competing.
What? Your pony is an awesome example. Because if your pony wasn't working, he'd be right back in that field where he was.
Yeah, I got my pony one day away from death out of a lady's mm-hmm. field who hadn't fed him for 3 months.
Well, that's
and
great.
He was standing there. He was standing around
he was
resting.
Standing around resting and had, you know, really we thought was going to die on the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you're speaking about the real rights of animals, which are right. an opportunity to live and be necessary in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the point of it, really, is you know, that's the whole idea. Like, what are animal rights really? And that's a great story because it's being, unfortunately, so many animals are losing their lives because of this inverted idea of what rights for them really are. You know, if the only right of an animal is to be on a rescue farm or the private preserve of some celebrity, we're just not going to have many animals around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, John, thank you so much. We've kept you way longer than I said we would.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
I appreciate that. It's Bedlam Farm, BedlamFarm.com.
Right.
And if you want to go, just go to Amazon and search John Katz, and you'll find all 100 books that he's written over the years. It's got to be 20-some, hasn't it?
27. And by the way, I'm collecting all the writings here, and they're going to publish an ebook. I'm going to donate most of the proceeds to the carriage horse people.
Oh, good for you.
Great.
I'm going to publish an ebook called Who Speaks for the Horses? Who Speaks for the Carriage Horses?
So
that'll be a good way to put some of this stuff to hopefully some
good
drop
me a note when it comes out and we'll promote it, okay?
Okay. And thank you so much for having me on. And please, anytime.
Well, that was so cool to talk to John. And I wasn't nervous at all once we got started.
I know. You didn't sound nervous.
Thank you. I
couldn't tell.
He was so easy to listen. He has that soothing voice.
I know he does. I love the way that he explains his point of view.
Well, thank you so much to John. We appreciate him taking the time out of it. You know, he has a busy schedule. He's an author. He's writing books and you know, and he has a living to make. Plus, he has to take care of all those animals on the farm up there at Bedlam.
I know.
So, we all know how hard that is.
Yeah.
I hope to have him back sometime. It was a joy to talk to him.